Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ The Fan, 105.1 FM, also streaming at KLIZ.com, and find our podcast wherever your podcasts are sold at Lakes, Woods, and Irons. Brought to you in part today by Cragen's Legacy Courses, home of the new Tom Lehman 18, plus the 2024 CRMC Classic, and the T-Hive, custom apparel for your business, event, team, or family, online at T-Hive.com. Chris, we had a guest last week, and we talked a little bit about the AWA, the Augusta Women's Amateur, and it was it's a great amateur tournament, and it really kind of lived up to things.
Oh, it was great. It showcased so many of the great women's amateur players today, and they did a fabulous job with the coverage, especially on Saturday. Yeah, they've got so many new great cameras that they use, and it highlights Augusta so well. But boy, Lottie Ward from England played incredible coming down the stretch, birdie in three of the last four holes.
Right.
She makes a makes a great birdie on 17, and then makes a great birdie on 18. And it was quite a tournament. Great for the game. Great for women's golf.
And one of those cool rounds of golf where the ended up being the second place finisher, but she posted a number that looked like she was going to be unbeatable there for a while.
Yeah, Bailey Schumacher played, shoot six under the final round, finished like two or three holes ahead of the leaders, and was kind of in command. It was interesting listening to Ward, in the interview, you see there's so many scoreboards there, and you're able to see those scoreboards, and then finish with those two birdies is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and that was one of the old holes that bites a lot of people was 15, and a couple of the girls who were having pretty good days, maybe three under for the day, four under for the day, and then they get to 15, and the water just sucks those balls in on 15. I don't get it.
it kind of goes back to our conversation last week with Meg Atkins, and Meg, talking about the experience of playing Augusta National, and that's definitely a hole that you have to play a little bit to have the local knowledge to be able to play that hole correctly and know how that green is going to react. And there's water both in front of it and in back of it, and it's a fairly large green, but you got to hit a really good shot in there.
Yeah, and they were kind of pin seeking, and any time they'd miss just a little bit left, it'd just suck back in the water. It seemed like so. We'll see
not the same pin that Sergio knocked three or four in the water a couple years, but not too much indifferent than that.
No, not much. How many he sucked like four in a row back in.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was pretty much hitting them where he wanted.
Yeah,
this week, of course, lots of coverage this week. Fun to watch the Golf Channel during Augusta and get all the great vistas of the course and the rundown of the players who were there, and an added drama with the Live boys coming over again, and they played pretty well last year at Augusta, so I don't know if anybody will make a run. I would guess a couple of them will be up there on the leaderboard. But a few of the guys, Scheffler's been playing pretty well. The Japanese golfer that won it a couple years ago, he's been finishing quite well of late, and he's pretty familiar with this golf course, plays well there. Matsuyama, right?
Yeah, Matsuyama. Yes. Yeah, if you look at the favorites, you got to look at Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele. Schauffele has been quietly having a great year. He's not a guy that if you went down the street and asked somebody who's playing great this year, but for the Live guys, John Rahm, the defending champion, it's hard to say how he's played. He hasn't played this year, There's only been a couple live events, and he really hasn't played since last season. So hard to say where his game is at, but you know, you can't count out Brooks Koepka in a major. He just seems to he has a different gear for the majors.
Yeah, pretty unique animal when it comes to the majors, and almost the I don't really care about other tournaments attitude, which is, you know, the tours don't love that, but it seems to be a fact of life when you look at his numbers.
Yeah, there's no question.
You wouldn't have bet a few years ago that he'd be the first of this generation to get to five majors, and he was the one that did it. Left some guys in the rearview mirror. I was reading on CBS Sports, they had a good article about the top 10 finishes in majors in recent years. Rory leads the pack. He's got 10. Scottie Scheffler with 9. Rahm with 8. Morikawa with 7. Koepka, Cameron Smith, Dustin Johnson, Will Zalatoris, and Xander Schauffele all with 6. Those are top 10 finishes in majors, I think maybe just since 2019 or something. So those guys always come to play. You always talk about Rory. He always finishes in the top 10, it seems like.
Oh, I mean, even when he's not playing well, he's in the top 10.
So, yeah, yeah.
You know, last week he finishes third, and you didn't even realize he was, playing well, really, other than if you followed the leaderboard that closely. But, he's at a different level, and he's just got a he just doesn't make many mistakes, but he doesn't make any great charges either.
Right, yeah, he finished third, but he was never really close. He ended up, he had that great sand shot on 18 out of the bunker. They had, and so did, was it Morikawa with him? They both made shots out of the sand on the 72nd hole, which is pretty incredible. Well, we're going to have Jack Waro on with us, director of golf at Cragen's. We'll talk with Jack, maybe get a pick his brain a little bit. Of course, the show airs on Saturday, so we're going to show our stupidity, maybe, you know, the leaders will already be playing for 2 days.
That's right.
We'll be back with more. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on The Fan. Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ and 105.1 FM, also streaming at KLIZ.com. And find our podcast wherever your podcasts are sold at Lakes, Woods, and Irons. This portion brought to you in part by Shannon's Auto Body with a brand new location in East Brainerd to better serve their customers. And by Ernie's on Gull with deck and patio seating and unmatched Gull Lake view, open year-round at 11. Chris, special guest, director of golf from Cragen's, Jack Waro, joins us. And we got a lot of topics to cover, Jack. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Love being on here. Obviously means the golf season's coming, so that's exciting.
Right, exactly. Let's talk about your golf course at first, director of golf at Cragen's, and obviously you've been a big part of the storyline in golf in the area for the last couple of years. And where are we at right now in the whole process, Jack?
Yeah, obviously we started this Tom Lehman renovation now, 3 years in, and we've had to battle through some tough times with, different holes, different routes. Things opening, things closing. Last year, we were able to get a little bit more consistent with 36 holes open, the Dutch 18 and the Lehman 18. We're going to start out the year with those two open, 36 holes. Again, another year where it's kind of amazing to watch the grass mature. You always say, oh, it looks really nice, right away. And then, obviously the tough part is you have to put play on that. You have to put, 50,000 rounds out on that golf course. Those golf cart marks and everything, obviously takes its toll, but as that grass matures and handles all that play, it just gets so much better. And we're seeing that at the end of the year last year, and then obviously we're excited for the beginning of the year this year. And our superintendent, Matt McKinnon, he's kind of watching that very closely, and he's kind of put it into kind of a three-year deal before it ends up being, really mature and can handle all that traffic. So it's nice just to see one more year and see that kind of start to take shape.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack, I always say to people, when you're doing what you guys have been doing, remodeling a golf course, building a golf course, it's kind of like living in your house while you're remodeling it or constructing it. So it's It's always a struggle, but for those who aren't familiar with the legacy, kind of give us a rundown of where you're at, where it's at now, and you've got 9 more holes that are going to be ready. I think you told us off air midsummer.
That's a great analogy, Chris. It's like the whole family's using the basement bathroom for a while. You know what I mean? It's yeah. Everyone's kind of confined into one space. But yeah, so you know the Dutch 18 and the Lehman 18 are what has been open, you know, since last year, and then we have one more 9 holes, which will become part of the Dutch 18. And then that'll become the Dutch 27. So much like the Pines, where they have 27 holes rotating on the day, we'll have that on the Dutch 27, plus we'll have the Lehman 18. And what I think is really cool about that is somebody on a golf package can stay with us, keep their clubs out of one clubhouse, and they can play 4 18-hole combinations in their stay. What a great variety for them, and just to have the ability to do that out of one spot. Is going to, I think, separate us. And I think it's as a golf package guy myself, that sounds kind of nice, you know, to keep your clubs in one spot. So that 9 was renovated last year. We moved pretty quickly on it. We had a plan in place to not do quite as much as we ended up doing. So that's a great thing. The big plan, truly, the whole purpose of this renovation was to make things more playable. And that 9 had a lot of particular spots that were unplayable. For example, number 3, I describe this to people. They have no idea how to get there, and I don't even know how to get there anymore in the past. But that hole had no landing area, and then on top of that, the green was impossible to hit. And what Tom has done is basically eliminated that problem. So now there's a nice big landing area. We were able to move a little bit of a marsh that was kind of blocking the landing area. And the green is nice and flat and receptive, and there's chipping area around that green. So even if you miss, you have a nice, easy chip or an easy putt off the fringe. And that's kind of the idea of the whole renovation. We just have taken all those spots where they were unpinnable or unplayable and made them playable. And I think I've already heard it from people playing the Dutch, for example. I just had the best round of my life here at Craigens. I want to hear that over and over and over again. Obviously, that helps them with their confidence. They like to play there. They enjoy their round. Pace of play is my other one, but it helps all of those things, and that's kind of the whole point. So we've done that also with this other 9, and that'll become part of the Dutch 27. We'll name those 9s the red, the white, and the blue, and that'll start out right away next year in 2025. We'll have that 27 open along with the Lehman 18 as well.
You know what that 3 means for me, Jack. One less triple bogey.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. That's fine. It's all relative to the customer, right? But if yours is triple, that's okay, and hopefully it leads to more pars and birdies for you, too.
Exactly. We had a really cool development over the course of the year. The CRMC Classic last year was terrific, 2023, and coming back in 2024. But what a cool story Jake Knapp is. Let's talk about that a little bit, Jack.
Yeah, obviously, you know, when you have a winner from PGA Tour Canada at the time, you kind of figure it's going to take them, I would say, a minimum of 3 years to get to a status on the PGA Tour. And obviously, with the way the world is right now with LIV and PGA Tour, the opportunities are coming a little bit quicker for these guys. So Jake won in 2022, played really well on the Korn Ferry, and then was able to win on the PGA Tour at the Mexico Open. And what's I think really, really cool for us is his last victory before the Mexico Open was the CRMC Championship. So what a cool story for us, for him. He literally, you know, I think, you know, his story has kind of went across the board here online and in the news, but he was a bouncer at a bar about two or three months prior to the CRMC Championship victory. And so to go from that and find your game and then start playing really well and then to win the Mexico Open and gain, you know, 2 years worth of status, exemptions to all the big events, including the Masters this week, what a cool story. And I can tell you, I watched the Mexico Open the whole way. I saw the nerves on the last round, And I felt like I was, you know, part of the Jake Knapp team. Like I was almost him. So I was, my wife was watching me and I was going nuts on the couch and just wanting that victory. So I actually wanted him to show the CRMC axe just and say, this is his last victory. I was just hoping for our little promo on NBC. It never came, but it was pretty fun to watch him pull that off. And I can't even imagine what his nerves were at that point. And to get all that status and kind of pave the way for, you know, the first CRMC champion to make it on tour. So that was really awesome.
It was a great commercial for the CRMC Classic when, you know, you get a winner on tour. That's exactly what we've been saying about how great these players are that come for the CRMC Classic. Then Jake Knapp just kind of proves it again this year.
Yeah, obviously, you know, we keep telling everyone this is the future of the PGA Tour, and that's exactly what it is. We went down to TPC Sawgrass, Eric and I and Matt, and we went down there and kind of talked with the tour. They're very involved of the purpose of the CRMC Championship, and it's truly to create an environment that these guys can learn how to be champions and then take that to the tour. Well, you know, Jake Knapp doing that so quickly was just proof that it works, right? And the system that the tour has in place to keep building, you know, to be the minor leagues and keep building those great players, great champions, is in place and it's working. It's right in front of us. So to have that opportunity with Jake, and not every tournament gets that. So it's nice to say to people, hey, this person that you're caddying for or playing in the pro-am with, they're going to be on tour someday and they could be the next, you know, something. And Jake definitely has that opportunity. There's no doubt about it.
Last year when we were talking, you know, kind of at this time, you said your goal was to make the CRMC kind of like the you know, the Phoenix Open, the atmosphere that has and some of the things that they do. And you've certainly succeeded in that. And am I correct? Did the CRMC win the Canadian Tour Event of the Year last year?
Yeah, we sat there the year prior. Eric and I went to the same PGA Tour meetings. They were in Phoenix that year, and we watched them crown the 2022 Tournament of the Year. And we went, "Wow, that was cool." Adam Hadwin handed the trophy to the tournament director. So we're like, we got to make sure we try to win this thing. You know, that's our goal. And we really kind of put that out to everybody, sponsors, employees, you know, obviously volunteers, and everyone kind of went for it. So I think that kind of motivated us to try to win that and be different. And we were so grateful to win that award. It was awesome. Obviously, now the pressure's on. Do it again, right? And now it's PGA Tour Americas, so we have 16 total events to compete against. So it really has applied some pressure to, like, how are you gonna match that or do better? So we have some things in place. We're gonna definitely create that atmosphere. You know, not necessarily Phoenix Open, because that's a little bit overboard in my mind, but something where it's really fun to be there. Being Labor Day weekend, we want to get family involved. And I think we really saw that last year, where lots of kids running around that really didn't know golf, and they walked away with such a cool experience getting to know these players and wanting to be part of the game. So we're really getting to that growing the game atmosphere and keeping families involved. And I think that's kind of where we're headed for this year as well.
One of the real noticeable things we get to talk to and interview quite a few of the guys while we're there is, Chris and I talk all the time about all the great people in golf, and there's so many great people, and they're such kind of gentlemen, all these young guys. And I mean, they're having a great time, but they take time with the kids, they take time with families and fans, and that's a big part of it.
There's no question. You know, like we kind of said, that the grooming of the players, and that's why we host these tournaments. The benefit that the CRMC Championship has is that we're at the end of the schedule. So these guys have been groomed for 15 tournaments this year. So they're going to know exactly kind of how to behave, how to act, how to handle winning, how to handle crowds, how to handle spectators. I would say event one, it's probably not quite as fun, or they don't know what they're getting into just yet. A lot of these guys are fresh out of college. They haven't played in a professional event like that. So as they get to the CRMC Championship, I think they get really good at this, and it really benefits our spectators, our volunteers, and especially the kids. And we're going to do a few cool things with autograph zones this year and selfie area and those kind of things that really kind of promote the event and promote these guys.
Mother Nature's been pretty good to us with the golf courses opening up, and happens to be golf fever time when the Masters comes on TV. This show airs on this segment will air on Saturday, and we might be able to see on TV what is tomorrow, Jack, because you're going to Augusta.
Yeah, I'm gonna be there Sunday with my wife and some friends, and it's their first time being there. I've been there a few times. I am so excited to go. I watched the Tiger's last win. I watched it on TV last night, and that just got the juices flowing. In my mind, I think I went to bed thinking, all right, Jake Knapp and Tiger Woods, final group. How cool would that be? So Sunday's going to be fun no matter what happens. I think the weather for the weekend has really changed. It's now like 85 and sunny or 82 and sunny on Sunday. So we can't be any more excited.
If Jake Knapp makes the cut, you're going to follow them all day?
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, I'll definitely follow Jake. We met up with his parents who truly, we had such a good conversation with them for, 10, 15 minutes. We actually lost track of Jake for like two holes because we talked about the CRMC, and they had such a good time watching him win. And I'd meet up with them and definitely watch Jake, and just kind of, it's kind of fun to follow someone and kind of live and die through their, bogeys and birdies. So absolutely, we'd follow him around for sure.
You've been to the Masters a few times, and I've been a lot of times, and I'm not going to be there this year, unfortunately. But when you go, give us your routine of what you do when you go, because it's such an incredible experience. I think it's the best event in all of sports. And if you haven't been there, give people a rundown of how you go to the Masters.
Yeah, I've done it. I've been there twice. Obviously, like right when you walk in the gate, I try to get there as early as possible, first of all. My wife even asked me, when are we leaving? We're driving from Atlanta over in the morning, which is not easy, but we don't care. We'll wake up at any time for golf. And I told her, we're going to be there early. So first thing I want to do is I want to get into that main open area. I don't even know what it would be. In my mind, it's somewhere near number one. But just to take it in for a second, right? The sun's going up. Yeah. Obviously, everyone's getting ready for an awesome tournament. And the actual grounds, with how hilly it is and how picturesque it is, just to sit there for 10 minutes and just take that in. That's the first thing I did last year, and I just loved it. I like to move my way around the golf course, starting with number one. Obviously, play is going that direction, so it makes the most sense to me. But the big thing that I always tell everyone is, like, every hole is its own stadium in a way. It has its own feel, its own look. There's the best spot to look from on each hole. And I kind of work my way around the golf course. I definitely favor the back nine, so I'll move pretty quick through the front nine. I'll definitely stop. I think, is number seven the par three that they hit over the people, Chris? I think it is, right?
Number six.
Number six. So they hit, and I always thought that was just such a cool spot to watch from above. Yeah. Just how crazy difficult that par three really is. And then to watch from below and just, kind of see that shot, right? I'll work my way through 8 and 9 pretty quickly. 10's too difficult, but it's beautiful. And then I'll get, obviously, to Amen Corner and just take it all in right there for sure. And then I always seem to end on 15, and I try to get a front spot on the 15th grandstand so I can watch them try to get home in two, watch them make a bunch of birds and eagles. And then I can lean over and look left and watch 16 as well, which is, I think, by far the most spectacular stadium seating you've ever seen. And as the guys are finishing, especially on Sunday, there's always fireworks on 16 because it's a possible hole-in-one pin. So I just that's how I do it, and I try to gather around 18, obviously, as people are finishing. And I literally will go from sun up to sundown, and I hope my wife is ready for that. I'm sure she is. But it's just so much fun. You want to take in as much as you can while you're there.
Yeah, on Sunday, it's worth getting going before they're even play on 15 and 16 to try to get one of those grandstand spots, because that's definitely one of the premier spots to watch on the golf course because of what you can see there.
There's no question. It's just, you can see everything, you can hear everything, which is obviously a big part of it. if you know, if it's not Scottie Scheffler winning by 10, there'll be some atmosphere for sure.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see you in the grandstands there on TV, Jack. That would be fun. There he is.
Well, take a look. I'll be smiling. That's for sure.
Jack, thanks for taking the time. I know it's a crazy busy time of year for you, and we sure appreciate it. We'll have you on a few times this summer, I hope.
Sounds good. I really appreciate it. Obviously excited for the season, so it's good to get started.
That's Jack Woro, Director of Golf at Craigan's Legacy Courses. And you're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 and 105.1 FM, KLIZ. Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ and 105.1 FM. Also streaming at KLIZ.com, and you can find our podcast, Lakes, Woods, and Irons, really wherever podcasts are sold. Brought to you in part by Whitefish Golf Course in Pequot Lakes, an experience that never disappoints, one of the area's premier 18-hole championship courses, and by Emily Greens, where golf is just more fun. Also, Shannon's Auto Body with a brand-new location in East Brainerd to better serve their customers. Chris has been at Augusta many years with the program on this particular week, but not this year. So we're going to go back and find an interview with Tripp Bowden, author, raconteur, and a storyteller, former caddy at Augusta. And he's got some great, great stories, maybe some unique stories that you may never have heard about the grounds at Augusta. So that's what we'll do in this segment, our interview with Tripp Bowden, raconteur and author. Here is that interview now.
Good friend of the show, always one of our most entertaining guests, but I want to welcome back Tripp Bowden, who, those of you remember, is a former, he was the first full-time white caddy at Augusta National, and now an author, and before we had him on, talked about his great book, Freddie and Me, Life Lessons from Freddie Bennett, Augusta National's legendary caddy master, and he's got a good, great new book out called The Caddy's Cookbook. Welcome to the show, Tripp.
Thanks, gents. Honored to be here, as always.
You know, I mentioned off air. This isn't exactly the Augusta Augusta Junior League's cookbook that they put out on a yearly basis, but it's kind of an insider's look at Augusta National, along with some of the great food around.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's actually, as I mentioned too off air, that they follow the rules and I do not. And it's good. Like you call it an insider's look. It's probably the only inside look that could be done that way, because no one knew the inside of that place like I did. I was very blessed and fortunate to grow up out there, and many of those recipes were actually made at our house from Freddie Bennett, and who got them from Chef Clark, who was the hand-picked chef from Mr. Roberts, Clifford Roberts, the founder of the club. And Freddie would bring various, let's just say, gifted food items to the house and cook them in our kitchen. That's growing up. So it was pretty special.
Tripp, for those who don't know, give us a little bit about your background and who Freddie Bennett is, and kind of lead us into your inspiration for writing this book.
Well, I first meet Freddie when I'm 10 years old, and had moved from a neighborhood where I knew everyone to a neighborhood where I knew no one, over on Wheeler Road, which is only about 5 minutes from the Augusta National. And I'm in the kitchen, where I hung out quite a bit in my youth, and I'm having a little chili, and it's summertime, and there's a knock on the door, and it's Freddie Bennett, and I go and open it, and he says, "Hey, man, it's Freddie. Is my doctor home?" And I said, "Yeah, a pop's in the back. Yeah, come on in." And he takes the steps two at a time, and he's just this mammoth of a man. He's got such a presence, and he shakes my hand, and he says, "You must be Tripp. I've heard all about you." And it's the first handshake I remember as a kid, and I was thinking, well, what is there to know about me? And Pop walks in, and they start talking, and then I sit back down, and Pop says, "Come on, Freddie, let's go into my office," which was our den, which had a bar in it, which was pretty cool. And his Pop's idea of Dr. and Freddie was a glass of scotch, Chivas Regal, and some Spanish peanuts with the skin on, and checking his blood pressure and telling him he's going to live, and they just start telling stories. And I got to go in there with him, and which was the first time ever to be in part of like an adult conversation. And Freddie's going on and on about this club, and I was very removed from the game of golf at that time in my life. In fact, I hated it. I wanted to go fishing or kick a soccer ball, anything but golf, because my dad, he played golf, and I just like he took my dad away from me. So Freddie's on and on about this club, and he turns to me and he says, I hear you don't like golf, but I hear you like to fish. And I said, man, I love to fish. He said, that does it. We're going to go to the club tomorrow, and we're going to go fishing. I said, all right, great, the club, cool. And I say to myself, what's he talking about, the club? And I said, I got a Zepco rod and reel. Just got it from Christmas. He said, oh, man, no rod and reel. He said, that'll only slow you down. I'm thinking, slow me down? What are you talking about? So we go out to the club, which, of course, turned out to be, this is summertime, the club is closed. This is Augusta National Golf Club. Tooling down Magnolia Lane, hop in Freddie's personal golf cart, zip on over to the par three with these cane poles that he cut from the bamboo that grows on number four. He made these cane poles himself. And we're just catching the brim in as fast as you can sling them up on the bank. Then he put them on a stringer. Just throw them in the cooler and let's go. And I've never seen fishing like that in my life. And he was right. The Zepco rod and reel would have slowed me down. I'm talking about in the water, boom, on the land. There you go. And Freddie turns to me and he says, I know you don't like golf, but have you ever given it a chance? And I thought, I've never had a question posed to me quite like that before. And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, all right, man, let me show you something. So he shows me the golf grip, the Hogan grip, you know, with the crook of your finger and the sort of meaty palm of your hand, just one finger, and I'm holding onto the cane pole like that. He says, all right, pulling a fish. I'm weighing about 12 pounds at this point in my life. I'm a tiny little kid. And he puts the cane pole in the water. I'm holding onto it with one finger, and I'm pulling a fish. And I said, that's golf? He said, that's golf. And I was hooked, no pun intended, hooked for life. And thanks to Freddie Bennett, I was blessed enough to make my high school golf team, which was an accomplishment considering my girlfriend, who is now my wife, broke up with me the day of qualifier. And I shoot 48 and don't make it, so they had another 9-hole qualifier. And I get on my knees and I grovel, which I've gotten really good at that in my marriage, groveling, and begging for mercy. And she has me back, and in the next qualifier, I shot 36 and made the golf team as a ninth grader. And Freddie came by the house with Pompano from Florida that was flown in that morning to the Augusta National, and Jeff Clark thought he was in his duty to give some of that Pompano to Freddie, and Freddie brought it by the house, and he fried it up in our kitchen to celebrate me making the golf team and getting my love of my life back. And he said, man, I want to hear all about it. And that recipe is actually in the book, in the Caddy's Cookbook.
And she's put up with you for how many years now, Tripp?
Believe it or not, it's been 20.
Yeah.
20
nice
years,
going.
And we were, yeah, thank you. Thank you. We were married on Halloween.
That's great.
Quite fitting. And I had 27 groomsmen. I've been in 19 weddings at that time. And felt like there were a lot of my friends who needed to go and rent a tux and take some cash. It was a great wedding. It was more of a party. In fact, my wife had been married once before, and her dad said, I'll pay for the reception, but I ain't paying for the wedding. So we did the old take out a second mortgage and pay for our own wedding. And when it comes time to, get in the horse and buggy and ride off into the sunset and throw the rice and all that stuff, I'm like, wait a minute. Hell with that. We paid for this damn thing. So we rode in the carriage around the church and came back in, and we blew it down till 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm paying for this party. We're going to stay to the end.
There you go. Well, Tripp, tell us about a Caddy's Cookbook. You got some great stuff in there. Caddy's Chewing Gum. I want to hear about that.
Oh, man, that was a classic, classic. Well, the idea of the book came from, I personally don't care for cookbooks, except for Ina Garten, the Barefoot Contessa lady. Her stuff is really good, but you got to be able to, know your way around a measurement, which I do not. I'm a dash of this, a sprinkle of that kind of person, and always have been. But somehow I've been able to create some pretty awesome dishes. And that was for the impetus of the Caddy's Cookbook. I wanted it to be fun. And I've been blessed to hear people say, I read your cookbook cover to cover. And I'm thinking, who reads a cookbook? That's perfect. That's exactly what I was hoping for. But the Caddy's Chewing Gum, true story, there was a guy named Larry Fowler, who was an Army vet and also a phenomenal caddy. And we're out there with our regular group, which, with you boys being in Minnesota, his name was Mr. Britston, Paul Britston, and he was from North Dakota. And he would winter in Bemidji, Minnesota. And I never saw him wear a sweater. I don't think he owned one. And he called me Abner, like Little Abner. I never knew why about that. And we were out there, and Larry liked to, you know, getting that oil, as Freddie would say, the night before. And Freddie's butter beans, which were a great cure for a hangover, he'd make those in the caddy house, and you'd get a big old bowl full of those in the morning to cure what ails you. But Mr. Brisson told Larry, he said, you show up tomorrow morning, and Larry was in our group, and Mr. Brisson would come down for a couple weeks at a time in February. He said, you show up drunk tomorrow with liquor on your breath, you're fired. Well, of course, Larry shows up drunk with liquor on his breath. But he's doing a very clever job of staying away from Mr. Brisson best he can. Well, we're tooling down number two, and I look over, and there's Larry jumping like a pogo stick and reaching up and grabbing pine needles. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? Pulls him down. These loblolly pine needles are really long, and they're apparently they're very chewy. And he puts them in his mouth. He's chewing them. And I'm like, what in the hell? And he goes, hey, my nickname is White Boy, which wasn't all that clever, but it fit. Hey, White Boy, White Boy. And he's blowing his breath on me, and I'm like, damn, that smells like a Christmas tree. So he comes tooling down the fairway with Mr. Brisson, and Mr. Brisson says, Larry, I smell Christmas. And he said, yeah, boss. And he's doing the old kind of fake accent. He says, yeah, boss. He said, they pipe that stuff in here right at Christmas, keep the Christmas spirit going. He said, me and my granddaddy, we used to go cut down on Christmas trees and nothing but pocket knives and gumption. But ain't that a beautiful smell? Mr. Prince said, yes. It smells like Christmas. He said, boy, they do everything out there, don't they? He said, yes, sir, they do. He called it God's own chewing gum. It worked. He kept his job.
It's got to be a great read trip with the, I love, well, for me, you know, with my attention span, like 5-page chapters and 6-page chapters and 4-page chapters, a guy can kind of get through a chapter or two and put together a pretty good meal, I'm guessing. Tell me about things an Augusta caddy might carry in his pockets.
Well, I was a grazer, kind of like a cow snacker, and I always had everything in my pocket you can imagine. I mean, it'd be a pork chop sandwich, and I'd take 2 bites of that on number one, and that would take me through number nine. We called them bone sandwiches, which was chicken, fried chicken, and 2 pieces of squishy white bread, and horse would push it down with his knuckles and wrap it up. Sometimes it'd be a sausage dog. This is a good one here. My first day caddying out there, and I'm hungry, and I go to the up to the window there where horse was cooking, and I asked for a hot dog, and he said sausage dog. I thought he misunderstood me. I said, no, I'd like a hot dog. He said, sausage dog. And here comes a sausage dog through the window. And it's like a pay window at the horse races with its metal bars and everything, so you couldn't get in there to whip his ass or him whip yours, I guess. And I said, okay, all right. And I'm thinking, well, I'd like a Coke. He said, grape soda. I said, no, a Coke, please. He said, grape soda. He slides a grape soda to me. And I thought, all right, I guess whatever's on the menu is on the menu. But whatever's on the menu, I put those in my pocket and just tooled on down the fairways. And sometimes it was there was a caddy named Donahue, who you may recall the phrase from Delta back in the day. We love to fly and it shows. And Freddie called Donahue Delta, so he loves to drink and it shows. And I would have these 40-ounce Crazy Horse malt liquors in my caddy suit, which was huge pockets. I don't know why the pockets were so huge on those caddy suits. Uniforms, except for, I mean, to put a 40-ounce, think about that, a 40-ounce beer sitting perfectly in my pocket. You couldn't even tell it was in there. And we'd have to go off, we called it first thing smoking in the mornings, and I just handed it to Donahue, and he called me his doctor to get him right with the chip, and he'd chug that bad boy, be gone by the first green. And one time, Donahue, good story on Donahue, he showed up just in bad shape, but his main man was in town, and he had to go out with him. So he puts the bag on his shoulder, and he's like spinning around like a top. And Freddie said, that ain't going to do. So Freddie put another bag on Donahue's shoulder. Donahue was upright and looking good, and he said, man, you're as balanced as the scales adjust. But I had everything in my pocket, Mac. I mean, you name it, it was in there. It was a can of sardines, a boiled egg, Nitchi crackers, bar none candy bars. If you needed something, I was your man. I was called Snack Man, too.
Nice. That was just a part of our interview with Tripp Bowden, the author and raconteur. You can find out more about Tripp and purchase his books, which are great, at trippbowden.com. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on The Fan. Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, 1380 KLIZ The Fan, 105.1 FM. Colin McDonald with you. We also stream the show at KLIZ.com, and you can always find our podcast at Lakes, Woods, and Irons, brought to you in part by Ernie's on Gull, with deck and patio seating and unmatched Gull Lake view, open year-round at 11 o'clock, and holiday stores in Cross Lake, Mill Avenue, and Excelsior Road. Chris, Masters weekend, of course. We're all going to be, well, you'll be teaching, but a lot of us will be glued to the TV for Saturday and Sunday, today and tomorrow. And you've got guys out there now with the courses opening up. The 12th was the opening date for a lot of the area courses. What do you got people working on early in the year, Chris, or do they come to you with ideas?
You know, a lot of times they come to me, but, you know, the kids that were in our high school program for the winter, the thing we're doing right now is, you know, when you're inside, it's hard to do. You can definitely get some good putting work done, but it's normally on a flat surface with you know, fairly quick speed. And for those kids, one of the big things I'm working on with them and having them do is work a lot on distance control and get their feel back. And you know, this time of year, the greens tend to be a bit slower, which I always think putting on slow greens is a little more difficult than fast greens, because there's, you know, slow green, there's more friction, there's more opportunity for the ball to get offline even when you hit good putts. So so that distance control, it's always the most important part, but it's really important this time of year when you haven't been playing much or at all. And so we're doing that, and we're doing a lot of, you know, getting out and testing people's distances. So learning how far you hit the ball, and, you know, if you've picked up some distance over the winter, which especially the kids, a lot of them, we've been doing speed training work with them. Get out on TrackMan and have them hit all their golf clubs and find out, you know, what, number one, what their average yardages are, but kind of their shot dispersion with all their clubs are. And you know, I think one of the mistakes people tend to make is one, they base all their yardages on their best shots, and secondly, they don't think about the range that they hit a golf club. So, you know, for instance, you know, your average yardage with your 7-iron may be 155, but that low average is maybe 148, and the high average is 162.
Yeah.
So you've got that range that you hit each club, and you've got to have an awareness of that. You know, when you're trying to, you know, cover a bunker or get to the front of the green, or, you know, if there's a back pin that you need to hit to, and you know, and if you don't want to go over the green for some reason, so you've got to have that near to far range. And if you have a good understanding of your right to left as well, then it's much easier to you know, avoid hazards and out of bounds and avoid short sighting yourself. So this time of year, it's really good to get out and figure those things out so you have better scoring opportunities.
Yeah, get to a range where they've got some good targets, some good reliable distances, and don't, like you say, short you're in the bunker, long you're in the water, so you need to know what that range is.
Yeah, better yet, get on a launch monitor where you can get the precise yardages.
Yeah.
And
you've got one of those, don't you?
I've got a couple of those. Yeah.
Well, Tiger's been in the press, big surprise, and of course, all the Golf Channel. When they look back all the time at these great Masters tournaments, but the only ones they ever show is when Tiger wins. I'm a little bit more of a historian. I'd love to see a whole bunch of different segments on that. I get it. It's ratings. But Tiger thinks he can win. He says perfect conditions, maybe it could happen. He thinks he's got one more in him.
Yeah, you can never count Tiger out. I think Augusta is probably the hardest place for him to win, just because of the, you know, it's such a hard walk. It's such a difficult walk. And he made the comment in his press conference on Tuesday that, you know, somebody asked him what the hardest shots for him were at Augusta, and with his, you know, physical limitations now. And he said, anything not on the tee.
Yeah.
You know, so the tee shots are okay, but every other shot is, you know, difficult for him because of the of all the slope. But, you know, for Tiger to win, I think, number one, they have to have really good weather. There can't be any delays. What really hurts Tiger is if he has to start and stop.
Yeah.
A lot of times, because his preparation to play around is really hard. I mean, if he has a morning tea time, he's up like really early in the gym and getting ready and whatever he has to do to prepare his body. And if there's that stop and start, he just can't deal with that. And the warm weather definitely is favorable to him as well. And, if he has to play in the cold, that's it's just not conducive to his body.
Yeah, his ankle seems like it's the most severely damaged, and that ankle on all those side hills at Augusta and uphill and downhill, that could be very difficult for him.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know, Scheffler and Rahm coming down the stretch again this year, that would be fun. They were at it last year. And Koepka was in the mix last year to the very end as well. So if you got three or four of the greatest in the world with nine holes to go on Sunday, it's about perfect.
Yeah, it's, the Masters is a tournament that never tends to disappoint. There's always great drama coming down the stretch.
Yeah, it always has been. Yeah, it's going to be great. All right, Chris,
thank you,
my friend. And we want to thank Jack Woro for joining us today and being a part of the show. Appreciate that. You've been listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ and 105.1 FM.